You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 338. We got a little bit of a chill podcast today. No huge news, but some interesting things, some cool things happening. I would say this is a regular week at Punk News. And, you know, it's always good to be regular, eat your fiber, keep everything smooth and easy. And speaking of things that are smooth and easy, I'm here with reviews writer, interviewer, news editor, Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, have you been eating your fiber? Has everything been going functioning as it should?
Yeah, I mean, smooth sailing over here.
Well, that's always good to hear. We are also here with the guy, the smoothest of all, the guy that is Mr. What I should say, health conscious, Mr. Proper functioning of his internal organs, the TV Weefy managing editor, Adam White. Adam White, has everything been regular up there in Canada? Everything working as it should? Everything is going in the right direction?
I was going to make a politics joke and then it escaped me and I was going to make some sort of like joke about my health and the fact that I'm sitting here drinking bourbon and that was going to escape me, whatever the point was, because I'm distracted right now because I'm trying to record a podcast like a professional and my cat has decided she's going to sit under my chair and meow at me incessantly. And it's just, it's fucking and she bit me because I was, all right. don't... John, we should remind the good people out there that this is hopefully your last, but definitely your second consecutive episode recording from a tin can at the bottom of a submarine.
Actually, I've listened to a lot of Hawkwind lately, so I'm actually channeling this through the psychic plane, a la Warrior on the Edge of Time, circa 1976, co-written by Michael Moorcock. Yeah,
that's way cooler than saying you're on an iPhone, but... This is the situation that we're in. So if you guys want, the listeners want John to have a computer so we can record this properly again, please send $2,400 to... yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Well, to Adam at punknews.org. And...
I would talk about computers, but this is not the tech blog, but I got a lot of opinions on computers. But speaking of people that got a lot of opinions, we got some good mail this week. We got two shorties and one longie. I think we'll do one shorty, one longie, then one shorty. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is our first shorty. This is from Camillo. And he said, this is the shorter version of the email that I would otherwise write. Punch every Nazi, from Camillo. This is from
awesome.
Sean addresses 3 points. Hey guys, I haven't written in a while, but there were a couple of things I just wanted to comment off. Sean says, I know you're probably sick of all the Nazi talk, but I just wanted to real quick squeeze my thoughts in. Don't punch Nazis. Think about it from their perspective. Feel free to cue Fuck Nazi Sympathy by Alice Rotten, but hear me out first. Discarding trolls like Richard Spencer, I believe racists have little control of the world over their worldview. If you grew up being told that you are a superior race and you don't have to come into contact with people who don't look like you, what's to stop you from being in possession of racist ideology? Inflicting violence upon someone who really doesn't know any better is just a shitty thing to do. My philosophy is that you can hate the idea, but don't hate the people who possess it. As stupid as racism is, I believe that people are defined by more than just one opinion, and I'm sure many decent human beings who are willing to listen if you'll engage them in conversation rather than combat. So that's Sean's first thing as sort of the Nazi punching discussion. It seems Nazi saying everybody's a human. Some people might be misguided, but deep down, everyone deserves fundamental respect as a human being. That's what Sean says. Here's the second point. Second, I just wanted to touch on the conversation about the overwhelmingly positive reviews on Punk News. Just so the listeners know, I think it was two podcasts ago, Rich, I think it was Rich. No, it, was it Rich from the UK who wrote us, or was it Neil? It was Neil, Liverpool Neil, who said he's sick of all these 8 and 9 star reviews at Punk News. Well, Sean says, I think Adam mentioned this briefly, but people tend to review what they like. For example, I wasn't a huge fan of the new Menzinger's record, and I'm sure I could write about why that was, but I wasn't clamoring to write a review about the album because someone who is into that band claimed it first. And rightfully so. I think music should be reviewed by people who understand the appeal and vision of the artist. If I was the only Punk News writer, I'm sure the site would have more diversity in score, but less diversity in opinion. And I'm sure it would turn quite a few Menzinger fans away as well. And here's Sean's third point. Finally, oh, and this is what was that festival with Morrissey that they were calling Emo Fest?
When We Were Young.
What a weird name for a fest. That was the fest that was getting criticism for not having enough women on the lineup. And so the argument was, is the festival orchestrator, not orchestrator, the festival organizer, was he to blame for being outright sexist, or was he really just kind of a symptom of an underlying issue that women aren't into those kinds of bands generally, or whatever, something like that. Anyway, that festival was getting some hate for having too many guys and not enough gals. Here's what Sean has to say. Finally, to John's point about culture dictating festival lineup diversity, I agree, but this past Riot Fest proved that when deliberate action is taken, it's not too hard to book a female-heavy festival. Here are just a few of the bands that I know off the top of my head that have female members who played Riot Fest 2016. Sleater, Kenny, Warren, Women, Bad Cop, Lars Stevenson, Effed Up, White Lung, Jessica Hernandez and the Deltas, Kitten Forever, The Julie Ruin, and Juliet Lewis and the Licks. Thanks for enjoying my opinion as always. And that's from Sean.
You know, I don't mind getting all this email about Nazis and stuff like that, just because it's a break from getting emails about fucking Green Day. So
This is from Jason down in Texas. Always good to hear from Jason down in Texas. He says, Social Distortion are real good. Mike Ness is the living legend. And that's from Jason down in Texas. Always good to hear from Jason.
Mike Ness was rocking the eyeliner way before Billy Joe ever rocked the eyeliner, speaking of talking about Green Day.
But were the Misfits first?
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, there's eyeliner and there's wearing makeup like a scary TV clown or something. So there's two different realms there. I don't think Mike.
Thank you for your knowledge on makeup.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't realize.
You're trying to look like some sort of clown and there is not that. And I would say that Mike Ness, God bless him, is on the not trying to look like a scary clown end of the spectrum. Whereas
just really sad.
Yeah. Just that. So anyways, that's mail. That's cool. What are we doing? I'm looking at Ricky's song that he wants to play here, and I'm sort of fascinated by this. So do we even lead into this, or is there a,
well, I do kind of, do you want me to just go ahead?
I totally have a way to link my Green Day shit talking into this. So please get started and I'll interject.
Okay, so I mean, you know, the last part of 2016, we, because of the Prophets of Rage EP and that whole sort of phenomenon that happened when they formed last year, we did talk quite a bit about Rage Against the Machine, and it never, I wanted to play a Rage Against the Machine song, but everything that I wanted to play seemed so obvious, whether it was like, you know, from Killing It in the Name to Bulls on Parade to, you know, Guerrilla Radio or whatever. And I didn't want to do something so obvious. So I have a question. I actually have a trivia question for both of you. The song you see that I'm going to play that's on the dock right now, it was specifically written for a certain 1998 film. And you can only find the song on that soundtrack, except for maybe a few other like rare copies of, I think, Battle of Los Angeles, maybe like the Australian versions. But for the most part, you can only find this song on that movie soundtrack. What movie was it?
Ricky, before you got on the call.
No, Adam, at the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
Godzilla.
Before
Ricky, before you joined the call, we talked about it for like 5 minutes.
Oh, fuck you guys. God damn it.
Also, as we pointed out, it also bears the rare distinction of having the world's only Jimmy Page, Puff Daddy combo album. And it has an exclusive Ben Folds song, Air.
There's also a Green Day song.
A Green Day song that is ridiculous. Basically, they took Brains Do and they put Godzilla noises into the song, which even when did this movie come out? 1998. Hold on here. 1998 minus what was that? Okay, I was 16 when this movie came out, right? So, as a 16-year-old boy, giant monster movie should be the absolute peak of you know, any of my non-girl related interests at that point, but there was nothing about it that was not really fucking ridiculous, especially that Green Day song. Like, I could not figure out who was the audience of that, where they were going to sit down and be like, you know what? I really liked, you know, Brain Stew's great. I like Green Day. Green Day is my punk band. Yay. Could there be more monster roaring in the song? Otherwise, exactly the same, just some roaring.
Well, okay. I wouldn't imagine Adam White as a 16-year-old chasing after girls. I can only imagine what that scene was like.
It would have been incredibly unsuccessful, because if this was 1998, so my hair was yellow, I was wearing giant pants, because everybody was wearing giant fucking pants.
We wearing Jankos?
I wasn't wearing Jankos, but you know how like there's this thing where when you, I guess if you were a teenager in the 90s, all your clothes were gigantic.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Like every I owned like a million extra large t-shirts, and I don't think I'm dramatically different size than when I was then, but like I wear a medium. Like I do not need to wear an extra large t-shirt, but in the 90s, Wallet Chain Adam totally thought he needed to wear giant everything, and I don't understand. So many people could have been clothed with the excess fabric.
God, you know, the one time I bring trivia to this and you guys just fucking blow it out of the water.
Ricky, you got to bring harder game than that, man.
John always brings trivia. Anyway, this movie was terrible. Who cast Matthew Broderick as for a Godzilla movie? We played a lot of we talked a lot about a Rage Against the Machine and Audio Slave and all that stuff. So I wanted to play a Rage Against the Machine song. Here's No Shelter by Rage Against the Machine. God damn it.
and this is the Punk News Podcast, and there be no shelter here. That was Rage doing No Shelter, which is not on any of their three main albums or four main albums, depending on how you count. Listen,
sure, yeah,
I'm always complaining about how Canadians are smug, and it always annoys me, but man, I got nothing this week. Let me tell you why. Adam White, I don't know you. Are you familiar with Donald Trump's passive-aggressive or maybe even aggressive-aggressive handshake?
Oh, you're speaking my language, John. What you are about to describe, we have been watching the instant replays of in slow motion to see where we stand and to figure out what's going on. John, I'm well aware.
Well, listen, so Donald Trump's got this thing, and I think it's got to be intentional, and I do think it's probably passive-aggressive or aggressive-aggressive, depending on how you look at it. He's got this thing where he reaches out to shake your hand, and then when you reach out, he, like, pulls your hand into, like, his gut and then, like, shakes your hand for too long, which is weird, and people read it as a sign of dominance, I guess, if you will. Well, and lots of world leaders have already fallen for it. Japan's prime minister had an issue with it. I think it was the French president had a problem with it. Well, you can tell that the Canadian, their boy Justin Trudeau, he was ready for this. So it was this week Justin Trudeau and Donald Trump met up together to have their first official meeting. And then I don't think they really talked about too much. They were kind of just like checking each other out, seeing what the deal was. And old Trumpy, he goes to do the old squeeze and pull, and as much as I can't stand how smug Canadians are, I got to give it to them, because honestly, we're looking bad and they're looking good. And that third boy Trudeau, he literally held his ground, squeezed Trumpy, squeezed his hand, and held that shake in the proper position while Trump tried to pull it back, and he quite simply wasn't strong enough to pull it back. And everyone was laughing about it. And then Trudeau had that his famous shit-eating grin and looked right at the camera. And we knew that he stood his ground against that passive-aggressive handshake, which quite directly may have set the tone for the next 4 years between Canadian-American relations. Adam White, do you agree?
Oh yeah, we are very proud of that, because actually everyone I'm being serious here. We were all sort of terrified of that, that not the handshake, but of the meeting. If for no other reason than the slightest breeze blown our way from the American economy in general, can knock us over. So we generally, we don't want to be on the end of a Donald Trump tirade, justified or not, of course not. But we really don't need him to do something to upset our trade relationship, because, like, it's most of our economy is selling stuff or buying stuff from the U.S. And if that gets mucked up at all, it's really going to screw up, like, a lot of business up here. So Justin's job was to kind of, like, go down there.
You call him Justin?
Yeah. Well, no, really? I mean, like, I can call him Joe like Sean Spicer did the other day, but
what an idiot. No, but I mean, do you often refer to your prime minister as like his first name?
I guess I do. Yeah.
Wow. That's weird.
It's kind of,
do most Canadians?
I feel like maybe that, I mean, I feel like if they're being derisive, they'd be like Trudeau. The reason is that, like, because his father was prime minister up here years ago, like if you're talking about like the Trudeau era, you're talking about his father and everything that went on then, because like there was some crazy shit that happened during the Trudeau era. This would have been like when like Nixon was in the States. But so the everyone has, you know, if you're of a certain age up here, you have like deep memories, either love or hate, depending on which region of Canada you live in, with Trudeau the senior. So I feel that like a lot of people will be like Justin, just because that's who we're talking about. And people on the right up here do it when they're being derisive, because they want to talk about him like he's a little boy and a media whore.
Well, I'd actually heard that the right in Canada refer to him as Zoolander. Is that true?
I've never heard.
That's funny.
That's funny, but I've never heard anyone.
How about little JJ? Are you considered that little JJ?
You see,
no, but I'm not. I think I've heard like
there's a lot of stuff that like people can like justifiably up here be mad at Justin Trudeau about, and I mean, the one right now that everyone seems to be up in arms about, at least in my lefty circles, are like there was some like promised electoral reform that was supposed to happen up here that he's walked back on and this and that. But like, that's not really interesting to you guys. But what happened here is that when he was running, everyone, and this is funny because there's some Trump parallels here, but when he was running, a lot of people were writing him off because he was young, you know, he was the, you know, cloistered son of a former leader, and he's just trying to get by on name recognition, and he was running against like all these like these old experienced farts and this and that and the other, and that he's had before he was in politics, he was like, he had like a bunch of jobs, but for a while he was just like a drama teacher. So if you're, you know, if you're on the right and you're trying to like play up your big old white guy, you know, military strongman type leader, it's really easy to deride the other guy by saying, look at this soft, you know, drama teacher, former bouncer, you know, son of a rich prime minister. Woo. Right. And he got a lot of that. But then that backfired on them. Can I say bigly? I'm going to say bigly. It backfired on
them. Oh, don't make it.
No, okay.
Don't make
it. All right. See, it backfired on them because there was a senator up here who was pretty like infamous for getting in trouble with the law and having all kinds of like really dramatic problems. And he at one point challenged Trudeau to fight him like in a boxing ring. So Trudeau shows up in this boxing ring, and like this is like he didn't have like as much of a public profile as he did at this point. This is before he was prime minister, of course. Trudeau shows up, basically like, you know, takes his shirt off. Turns out he's jacked. He's got this big fucking falcon tattoo thing on his arm, and he knocked the dude out. Right, so
is politics in Canada decided like celebrity boxing like, from the 90s?
Was that nothing that interesting ever happens up here? So it was totally surreal that happened at all, right? But afterwards, that sort of took a lot of the fire out of the you know, oh, that he's just like a soft lefty, you know, effeminate guy, and he's like, no, he just showed up and fucking knocked your dude out.
Wait, is Canada actually the Klingon Empire where all disputes are settled by trial by combat? Are you a Klingon, Adam? Anyway, listen, Canada has been... go ahead, Adam.
I don't know. Was I going somewhere? I don't know where I was going. Anyway, so yeah. So anyways,
so apparently
I call him Justin. I think he's okay with that.
Kapah! I am Adam White, son of White. Kapah! Anyways, listen, at Canada, not only has their prime minister been doing the old handy shaky turnaround Lucy, but they are killing it music wise this week. F'd up. They're putting out a new Zodiac 12 inch. I think this is number 8 of 12, which is blowing my mind because when they were at like number 4, I'm like, no way they're going to make it to 12. It's looking like they're going to make it to 12. I think they're up to number 8, which is Year of the Snake. It's going to be out on Tang Crimes Records next month. Year of the Snake, boys. It's looking cool. This is the second Zodiac by Tank Crimes. The first one was Year of the Dragon, which is probably my second favorite effed up song ever. The Zodiac after that was Year of the Hare, which I thought was extremely interesting. Are you guys excited for Year of the Snake? Any predictions as to what it's going to sound like? Also, and this is worth talking about. I know that this flustered young Ricky to a degree is they put out like 150 black vinyl, 400 colored vinyl.
This flustered Adam.
Oh, I thought it was Ricky.
Adam asked me about this, and he brought it up to me first.
I'm flustered, man.
Well, I've got the answer, but I'll let you two duke it out Canada style, and then I'll come in with some sense. But you two talk about the weird pressing, and are you excited for the new effed up 12-inch Zodiac single?
Well, I'll just get mine out of the way. You know, I really tried with Fucked Up. I think they're cool. I saw them live. I tried getting into the stuff. I am not as big of a fan as you two. So I'll probably be skipping this. I do love No Passer On and The Police 7 inches though. Those are great. But the long form hardcore stuff just exhausts me. And I don't hate them. I think they're cool. I think Damien is a very cool figure in the scene right now. No hate. It just didn't really click for me that much.
So yeah, I mean, I'm excited for this. I own a good portion of the Zodiac ones. I don't think I own them all because I was never thinking about it like a collector. I just kept grabbing them because they were cool. So I've never been unhappy with with one of them. They're always sort of like a weird journey and an experience. I remember I really liked, I think Year of the Tiger, and I think Year of the Pig is one of the most like vicious songs ever. Just maybe if for nothing else than the subject matter that it's about. But yeah, I'm excited for this. And I did something which I normally never do, which is I went and I like pre-ordered vinyl. And I thought to myself, I am Ricky Frankie right now, pre-ordering my vinyl. And I'm here and I'm filling out my thing. And then I'm filling it out and I'm like, okay. So they're making, what are they pressing? Like 2,000 of these, right? Something like that. Yeah. So the bulk of them are just going to be on clear vinyl. And then they had a handful of them that are going to be picture discs that look really crazy and psychedelic and neat. And then what, 350 with this like color splatter on it, and then 250 black. And normally when you're looking at one of these things, you see that like black is sort of the mainline one, right? Like black is what we're just trying to push out the door. And if you want to buy one of the fancy color bullshit ones, then you can go do that. But there's less of them. But I looked at this and I thought, wow, the black is the lowest number. And I don't quite know why that is. So I asked, hey, given this choice, what would you do? And Ricky gave me,
oh God, my answer.
Ricky gave me
get both.
Yeah. Ricky said, order both.
Well, I said, because for context, you asked me and I said, well, I'm thinking, he really likes this band. This might be one of those rare times where you get both pressings. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, so I don't like that answer because
no, it was a bad one.
Yeah, if for no other reason, it's not It's not an economically responsible answer. No,
it's not. I was a little proud and thought, you know, maybe let's try it. Let's see what
happens. I sort of want to go to a restaurant with you and be like one everything, right? Like I'm fucking choosing. So I went up and I ordered the splatter one because of the common, I guess, picture discs sound horrible wisdom. But John, yeah, you did the opposite.
Because I made the biggest faux pas. I did not make the biggest faux pas ever, but I made a faux pas. Is I ordered so early, it was before they listed the pressing ones. And I didn't want to get a picture disc because picture discs sound like crap. But I also ordered the CD. And so I'm like, well, the picture disc looks cool and it's probably the rare. So I ordered the picture disc. Lo and behold, the black is the rarest and the black is my preferred format. Black's always the best because I think it was Liverpool Neil or was it Rich who wrote in with a scientific explanation is that black does have the best sound quality. So I should have ordered black, but I ordered the friggin' picture disc. I'm so mad. And it's going to, for the next 60 years, whenever I look at this picture disc, I'm going to be annoyed that I ordered the picture disc instead of black. It's going to haunt me. Well, anyway,
you know that this doesn't happen that often, at least with the labels that I typically pre-order from. But this isn't like unprecedented. The one time this happened, was Fat put out in 2013, I think, that Off With Their Heads Morning Glory split, and they did like 200 on black and then 400 on green and I think another 400 on green on red. And I was put in the same spot you guys were a few days ago, and I ended up getting the black.
Well, black is the best. Once you go black, you don't go back. But there's a reason why black is the most limited number, and it's Tank Crimes actually being the most legit record label there is, because most consumers, given the choice between black vinyl and colored vinyl, what do they pick?
They're going to take a colored.
Well, they'll go for the colored. Yeah.
Right. And so labels often make color the most rarest, and that makes that people blow like in crazy amounts of money just for a color, which sounds worse than black because it's the most rare. So Tank Crunch is actually meeting the demand, and they're making black the most rare because it's the least in demand, and making the color ones the least rare because they're the most in demand, which really goes to show that they're actually fighting the consumerism and kind of inherent silliness of collecting colored vinyl when really all the music on them is all the same. So that's right. Why they did
that. Yeah. So in the case of the Morning Glory Off of Their Head split, I just went for the rarest. At the time, I really wasn't sure. I was still in the middle of the debate whether color made a difference or not, but I guess black is the best sounding. But yeah, Wait, Adam, what did you end up going with?
I think I did the splatter one. Just because, like, the picture disc thing, I knew is that, you know, that's I figured that, like, my probably crappy hearing and probably crappy equipment is going to make more or less the splatter one and the black one sound close enough to me that I'm never going to notice, like, oh, this could sound so much better. So,
yeah,
you know,
well, I think the picture disc thing is just more for, like, the, you know, the mega fans that just want a piece to more, collect more than just than actually play. Like, I have one picture. I think I have one picture disc. And I never play it because I know it's going to sound like garbage. And that's, I think, Reinventing Axl Rose. That album came out of picture disc of the cover, and I thought that was awesome. But that was it, yeah.
I've got an Elton John picture disc. It's Lonely Man, maybe one of his worst albums. Listen, speaking of good albums... Not worst albums. Adam White, he's a tastemaker. Not only is Adam White a tastemaker, he was hip to this band, I think, before they released their first physical single, and now they're releasing all their tracks on Fat and Dine Alone Records, The Dirty Nil. The question is, Dirty Nil is now releasing a compilation. It's got all their singles on Fat Records. Adam White has been hyping this band for 2, 3, maybe 4 years. He was hot to them before anybody knew about him, but the question is Adam White excited for this compilation? Because he's already heard all these tunes lots of times, and he's seen the band live lots of times. Second question is, Fat quite wisely has been kind of making it their program to test out bands by re-releasing their material. See Nightbirds, see Pairs, and if that does well, then they release an album by them in full. Adam White, are you excited for this, or have you seen this all before? Are you a tastemaker? And also, do you think Fat is giving Dirty Nil a tryout for a full album, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
So, I mean, I'm not a tastemaker. Someone, like, local people around here that I consider tastemakers told me about the Dirty Nil, like, back in 2000 and, I don't know, 11 or whatever. But it was, you know, it was hardly my discovery. It was, like, people who I'm smart enough to listen to telling me about it.
Fat Mike said he signed him based on your reviews alone.
Oh, did he? That's nice. I mean, from what I understand, Fat Mike heard the Fucking Up Young single, which was the one that came out in 2011. I don't know if he heard it then or if he heard it later, but that was sort of what turned him on to them. I mean, Fat has done a trial with them in that they released the single to Cinnamon there. And if the behind the scenes drama is sort of what I expect it to be, I wouldn't doubt that they had some offer to put out something on Fat. But
they did. They talked about it on Noisy.
Yeah. But the, so they're on Dine Alone with, like, just about, like, everyone else up here right now. But, like, Dine Alone's got a lot of love from, like, the Canadian music scene. And they do a lot to help bands that are in that Ontario scene. They're people that are from that community that run that label. So I totally get the appeal if you're a band that's locally here from having the choice of doing, like, Dine Alone or anything else to do Dine Alone. And for that last full length they did, I'm sure Dine Alone, you know, they wanted to, it was the big debut full length. They wanted to be behind it kind of fully. In this case, they're doing the split, which, you know, maybe it's the consolidation prize for Fat in that case, where they're saying, you know, you can release this in the States. We'll release it in Canada. It's not a proper full length. It's a singles collection, so it's, like, maybe a little bit of a less big deal, so we don't need to, like, worry about having it all be on Dine Alone. I don't know. That's my, I don't have any inside information on this. I'm just kind of speculating about how that worked. What was the other question you had? I don't know. Whatever.
The question, are you excited, or you already heard all these jams?
I'm excited about this for a few reasons, I guess. I have
what a ringing endorsement. I
will definitely pick it up because I love this band, and I'd be happy to have all this stuff on a long player. This actually mirrors, and the reason I'm excited about this is that this more or less mirrors, like, an iTunes playlist that's been on my phone for, you know, 4 or 5 years at this point that I kept throwing stuff into. The Dirty Nil would release, like, you know, one or two songs every 6 months. So you would just slowly build up to something that looks a lot like this. The first couple songs on here, let's see, and actually everything up through feel like everything up through Nicotine or no. Yeah. So the first six songs that are on this record were all from various 7 inches that came out. There is stuff that is not on here, and it was mostly because they were different cuts of things. So I imagine that the version of Cinnamon that's on this is the same that's on their Fat 7-inch that they released, but there was an earlier recording of that was on some 7-inch or local comp for a while, and I kind of prefer that, so I don't know which one's on here. They left off the song Wrestle You to Husker Du, which was on their which was on Higher Power. It appeared in an earlier form on the Smite 10-inch, and it's not on here a lot, but the rest of the songs from Smite are. There was a song that I'm surprised isn't on here called Bruto Bloody Bruto that they used to play all the time, but it is not to be seen. And the interesting thing on this is if you looked at some of the other websites that talked about this news, most of them said that there was one unreleased song on here. And my guess is that it's the 11th track on here, which is Caroline. Now, that is actually a song from they had a really rough, really green EP that they released. It was probably the first thing that they ever released. And it would have been in like maybe 2009 or something like that. Like you can hear the songs from it on YouTube, and like they are super, super, super young. Like I mean, they may have even been in high school at that point, but Caroline was one of the songs off of that, and it's sort of, I mean, they still play it live, but it sounds like shit on that recording. So if I have to imagine, this is probably a re-recording of that, which would be kind of cool because it's a nice song. So anyways, yeah, I don't know, Dirty Nail, I'm happy about this. There are songs that are not on here as well because they're covers, and this band has done tons of covers. They did a 7-inch of the Month Club a while ago that I didn't sign up for like a dummy. But there was a really good cover of like the Replacements' Fuck School that was on there. There was a cover of like the Misfits' Last Caress that's floating around.
The Fugazi covers.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was the cover of Provisional that was on the recent 7-inch. Oh, there was a cover of Moon Age Daydream that was on the same.
Oh,
the Moon Age Daydream cover is great. It's on the same 7-inch as Little Metal Baby Fist, which is the third song on this new thing. So anyways, there's stuff they have a whole covers record worth of stuff that they could be putting out. So, yeah,
I wish they would.
They may. You never know. Anyways, I'm excited about this. They're doing a whole bunch of touring. They're headed over to the UK and other places in Europe with the Menzingers and the Flatliners, and then they're touring in Canada with Billy Talent and Monster Truck. So playing with fairly bigger bands right now. So good for them. I want to hop from there to the next one. We're in the middle of something that I labeled in the show notes here as Canada time at the moment, if anyone hasn't clued into this. So Ancient Shapes are setting up to release a new full length called Silent Rave. Ancient Shapes is the mysterious punk side project of Daniel Romano. Romano was, I guess, of course, in the band Attack in Black that a lot of people have a lot of fondness for that were around in the, I don't know, early mid 2000s. I don't know when Attack in Black would have been around and broke up. Probably the late 2000s, let's say. And they were a local band for me, and a lot of people really liked them. When they split, all the members sort of went off and formed their own wacky little side projects and solo groups, and all the solo stuff that's come out of them has been really good. Romano's been the one that has been maybe the most successful since that, in that he has like four, I think, full lengths right now that are all like really traditional alt country. Well, the last one was kind of psychedelic, but the everything before that, Lee Hazelwood, like old school 1950s country sounding stuff. So Romano's been pretty successful doing that. And with a lot of these guys, you'd expect that they're going to go from being, you know, in a punk band as a kid to then they're going to go, you know, be a respectable, you know, musician or artist elsewhere and leave their punk past behind. But fucking like Ancient Shapes is far more of a punk band than even Attack in Black was. Like Attack in Black was, you know, very much a, you know, mid 2000s pop punk act with, you know, there was a lot of Weaker Than's influence that was in there, but they were essentially a modern punk band. Ancient Shapes sounds like the Buzzcocks. So They released the first Ancient Shapes record last year as a surprise. So if you bought the new full length that Dan put out for his country project, just in the record, there was a CD that was labeled Ancient Shapes and didn't say much else. And that was this whole little like punk full length that he just like recorded and didn't tell anyone about and then put out. So the band is, they're touring around right now and playing shows in all the kind of, all the old haunts in Ontario here. They're playing down here next Friday in my neck of the woods. And, they've announced that they've got a whole new record that they've done too. And that's what Silent Rave is. And they've gone and they've made tapes of it, and they're going to be selling the tapes at their shows coming up, and there will be, you know, wax at some point. But, yeah, so that's, I don't know. That's super exciting. I never know how much people know about the various Attack and Black offshoots outside of sort of the Ontario area, but they're, you know, it's exciting stuff for me. Big artists in the Adam pantheon there. We got one more though in Canada time here,
which took a bit of heat.
Ricky, I'm totally curious where you're coming in on this one, because you and me have had we've had words about this. So,
I mean, listen, not harsh words. I think just,
we've had perplexing differences of opinion. So the Flatliners out of Toronto, they've announced that they're going to be releasing their fifth studio release, this April. It's going to be called Inviting Light. It's going to be out on Rise Records in the US and Dine Alone, who we just talked about, in Canada. You can find a links to everything for the pre-orders over on Punk News right now. This album was produced by Peter Pablo and Derek Hoffman, and they've released a song from the record called Human Party Trick, which you can go check out along with the track listing and cover art and all the rest of that stuff. But Ricky, where do you come in on this? Because where do you come in?
All right. Here's the thing. I do like this band, okay? This song didn't do a whole lot for me. I didn't hate it, but they kind of upped the production a lot, and it didn't really do much for me. And I didn't pre-order this. I am incredibly interested though in hearing this when it finally comes out, whatever it streams or whenever if I get the MP3s. So I'm not poo-pooing this, because I really do like this band. I've seen them several times throughout the years. But I feel like this song did get a lot of shit overall in the comments, and I don't think justifiably so. These guys have been overall pretty good in my book. They haven't been like my number one band, but they've always been a band I do enjoy. I think Cavalcade was a genius record. I love their ska phase. Even that that Resuscitation of the Year 7-inch from like 2 years ago was fucking awesome. So I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure where I am based on this particular song. I have a feeling there are better songs than this on there. And I think they chose I think this is one of those cases like Against Me did this past year, where they chose a bad song to premiere as their first single.
I don't know if Against Me had a whole lot to pick from, to tell you the truth.
They could have done Rebecca and then said and not released anything else, and it would have been fine.
The problem is that everyone would pick up the record being like, I'm happy for this record full of songs that sound like Rebecca. And then,
true. God damn it. Yeah. All right, fine. So it wasn't the strongest Against Me record, whatever. But that's kind of where I am. I'm 100% opening to listening to them, because I don't want to judge a band I like based on one song. I'm not going to do that. So I'm totally open to giving this a chance.
Well, listen, if there was a more aptly named band than the Flatliners, you'd have a hard time finding
it. That's mean.
Adam, what, did you have anything insightful to say about this record?
I do, but fire your shots here.
Oh, no, I don't have anything insightful to say. I said all I had to say, Robert Christal. I said what I needed to say in a pithy one-liner. which neither truly described the ambient of the release, nor did it give it a justifiable analysis. It was really just more of a comment on, aren't I clever that I can come up with this zinger than truly engaging with the art at hand.
I'm going to keep my powder dry on this one. It's not a particularly engaging song to lead off as a single, and it's right. And it's sort yeah. of coupled with the added weight of having to debut not just the production style that they've gone with for this record, but it's also ushering in the era that they're in. So, you know, the cover art for this is very different than any of the, you know, the punk rocky stuff that they've done on their past records. Everything down to the fucking font that they're writing their name in, right? Everything is very cleaned up and polished and made presentable here. And normally, if I go by the experience of having, you know, heard bands do this, it doesn't work out well. So we'll wait and see. I mean, this is not something I hated, but it's not something, as I sit here and stare at the thumbnail on the YouTube video right now, that I can tell you at all what it sounded like. And I've listened to it a couple times. So, you know, I really like this band. But this isn't moving my dial one way or the other at the moment. So, wow.
I think you and I have just come basically agreed on the flatline.
I guess. Well,
I think effed up actually has an interesting parallel to this in effed up's records. The last two records weren't the most rockingest records, and they were certainly their most calm records, especially Glass Boys by far, especially compared to Chemistry of Common Life and the Hidden Worlds. However, effed up's 12 inches have been getting wilder and wilder. Year of the Dragon was a kind of like a heavy metal or King Crimson type song. Year of the Hare was just like this completely trippy cut up track, and Year of the Snake, who knows what it's going to be like, but it looks pretty far out with the far out art. The point I'm making is I don't know why some bands do feel as though they have to quote mature or make calmer music when they don't necessarily have to be like, you know, the stereotypical hardcore Casualties type band, but they can still do far out, weird, interesting new things like effed up is doing. And I really think that's the way for a band to age, especially as they get older, rather than just kind of become a singer songwriter. Speaking of bands that are aging, Punk Rock Bowling, Asbury Park, the details have been announced. Playing Punk Rock Bowling, Asbury Park, not Iggy Pop, not Choking Victim, but instead The Specials, NoFX, Charles Bradley, famed soul singer, Hosers, Crazy in the Brains, and a couple of a bands that I'm, Buzzcocks, and some other bands. Lifetime, featuring Dan Yemin. Surprise, I don't know if that counts as a reunion. What's interesting about Asbury Park, probably fewer big names than Punk Rock Bowling Vegas, hard to get bigger than Iggy Pop, but a lot of, I guess, unexpected choices. Lifetime, Charles Bradley, very interesting selection, bringing in a soul singer into the Punk Rock Festival. And also The Specials, I don't think anyone necessarily saw that coming, because The Specials are around, but they don't really tour that much. And I expect this is not Jeffrey Dammers. What's his name? Jeffrey Dammers?
Jerry
Danner's version of the band. So I don't know, Ricky or Adam, do you have any pull one way or another on this lineup, namely Charles Bradley, Lifetime, NoFX, those guys being The Specials, those guys being the special guests?
This is cool. There are a lot of bands. This actually, I would, if I were on the East Coast, I'd totally go to this too. I think last year we had Dillinger Four. We had Leftover Crack at a at a club show. And then you guys got Pup. That's cool. I've never seen Crazy in the Brains, though I want to. NoFX is good. Buzzcocks are great. NoFX is great, too. But Buzzcocks are great when I saw them there. This should be cool. Comparing it to the Las Vegas one, they're just, for me, the Vegas lineup for me has been, there are actually a good amount of bands I've never seen. So that's why I'm generally interested in going, Iggy Pop being one of them. And then we got some awesome bands that I've seen before, like Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, and we got Off and we got Choking Victim, which I'm excited to see again. So I'm going more for kind of like branching out, I think, next this time around. This is still a killer lineup. I mean, you guys had some also really, really great club shows from what I remember last year.
Yeah, last year had a Morning Glory World Inferno, which was awesome. I'm sorry, Adam, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think this is actually a really cool lineup. I was very tempted to actually make the trip into your smoking crater of a country to go see this.
I have reason not to, but
Specials, that's cool. Charles Bradley, that's fucking wild, right? Like what a weird thing to slot into the lineup on something like this, but that's great. Like Dillinger Four, like The Explosion, I didn't know The Explosion were around anymore, but there was a time when I was younger where I was all about The Explosion, so that's cool. Pup's there. John, I felt really good to see Crazy in the Brains on here. I thought that was some sort of validation of one of your pet weirdo bands showed up on
Didn't they play a club show last year?
No, Crazy in the Brains did not. No, Nightbirds did.
Oh, okay.
And then yeah, NOFX, Buzzcocks, Up for Crack, Lifetime. This is all very cool to me. What's probably going to make it not happen is that I've been totally dead set that I'm going to Ottawa Explosion this year. And that is the weekend after this, but it's one of those festivals that sort of starts maybe on a Wednesday or a Thursday. So it's really like 2 days away from the last day of Punk Rock Bowling. And I don't know if I can abandon my wife and children for that long to traipse around the continent going to punk rock shows. So I got to pick my battles here. So, yeah.
Daddy, will you take me to school? Sorry, I'm off to see NOFX.
Yeah, that was basically what happened. So,
wait, John, is this going to be your first NOFX show?
It is, yes.
Nice. Nice. It's a good show.
And let me tell you, if a certain somebody starts asking Johnny G, what band should I sign to a certain label? Johnny G's naming names. Adam White, name a name.
Want me to name drop the best thing? I was at a Warped Tour once, and we were hanging out backstage with, who were we with? Someone from Anti-Flag, Against Me was on stage. Someone from Anti-Flag, I forget what it was, but NOFX was on stage, and then they sang Punk News is Much Orgier in Canada. As a lyric to one of their songs, and me and Auburn were standing there and we thought, oh, that was nice. So yeah. Ha.
What I meant was play a song, but if you just want to tell everyone why you're cool,
I would love to tell everybody why I was cool. I'm trying to think who you were sitting with. Oh, I think it might've been Tim from Rise Against. Ah, look at that, name dropping. Okay. So, this band is totally fucking blowing me away. And there is some really cool John Gentile style trivia involved in it. John, what or who
Adam
is a boogie boy?
That's from Devo. Bougie boy or boogie boy, depending on how you pronounce it, is the character created by Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo. And he kind of represents the absolute devolution of humanity to a kind of a walking imbecile that has no malintent, but has no way to preserve himself and no instinct for, I guess, progression.
Bingo. And that is exactly what this band is named after. So this is the Boogie Boys out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. Boogie, again, spelt B-O-O-J-I-Jed. Yeah, that's how we say J in Canada, is Jed. B-O-O-J-I, which is in the Devo style. There's Devo influence all over this shit. But like super sped up, super distorted, super wacky. This is one of these bands where I absolutely adore the fact that I pull up their record and iTunes is telling me like 12 songs, 20 minutes. And I'm like, that is exactly what I want out of a punk rock record. You know, songs that are,
I got, man, I gotta check this like, out. This band.
I'm gonna play the longest song on the record right now, which is 2 minutes and 50 seconds or something like that, and it's completely atypical of the length of the songs on this record. I cannot hear or understand. I cannot understand a word that anyone is saying on this record. It's just distorted wackiness the whole time. But I'm so into it. I heard about this from Mr. Steve Ademic of the Steve Ademic Band. He was singing these guys' praise over on Facebook the other day. And yeah, it's really cool. The record that they have, which is self-titled, was just released on Drunken Sailor Records out of the UK. So probably not something you're going to find in your local record store, but it's really cool. So this song is called... What?
Oh, go ahead. I'm being rude, but it actually does have North American distribution. I'm sorry. That was rude.
Oh, well, that's good, because I was looking at ordering it from the UK and I'm like, man, once I ship it over the ocean, it costs like 3 times as much as it should cost. So anyways, this song is called Confess and Control, or Confess plus sign control, however you want to pronounce that, by the Boogie Boys out of Halifax.
Speaking of being controlled after confessing, we got a couple of stories we're going to burn through. And this one guy has been controlled after he confessed, but now he's no longer controlled because he confessed. Tim Lambesis, he's out of the Slammer after a mere 2.5 years. As you remember, the guy was the singer of As I Lay Dying about 3 years ago, maybe. And he started taking steroids and he became really, really religious. Well, he quote became really religious, and while he was doing steroids, he asked his trainer, he says, listen, I want to kill my wife, you know, a hitman. And so the trainer, being the upright citizen that he is, ran right to the police and said to the police, The guy in the trainer, he says he wants me to hire a hitman to kill his wife. So the police did a sting, and then the trainer acted like he was going to get somebody to hire a hitman to kill Tim Lambesis's wife. And Tim Lambesis gave him some money to give to a hitman, and then the cops came and arrested Tim Lambesis for attempting to hire a hitman to kill his wife. And he wound up getting 6 years in the slammer. But recently it came out that he was released in December, meaning he served a mere 2.5 years for attempted murder. And I don't know if a lot of things that people were talking about this was he did 2.5 years. His the rest of his family is completely destroyed or shaken or in problems. And people were saying, well, this guy's going to write a book or something and make out like roses or whatever the word I'm looking for. He's going to come out sunny side up on this because he only did 2.5 years. Now he's out. He's got a clean slate, and there's a lot of opportunities for him to make money on this. I don't know if you guys have any opinion on that with regards to the judicial system, with regard to this kind of a thing. Perhaps you could say, to his credit, his release was very quiet, unlike what the hell is his name? Zimmerman, who killed Trayvon Martin, who went around broadcasting that he's the world's biggest asshole, or unlike our president, who was doing much the same. Tim Lambesis was released, and kind of there was no peep out of him until it was, of all people, the guitarist from Dokken in a radio show let the world know that he was released about a month and a half ago. So I don't know if there's any kernels of truth or insight we can take from this, except for that maybe crime does pay, as unfortunate as that is.
Why wasn't divorce an option is my question.
Because, well, that's always like I watch forensic files, and these guys like get all these complicated things like kill their wives. It's like just get a divorce. It's like, what's wrong with you?
I assume he's not juicing anymore, or is that?
Well, who knows? Who knows? Yeah.
This is messed up. All right.
The weirdest thing about this, and I'm sure that if you were in his place. This is the stupidest thing that anyone has ever said. When I saw this story, I was like, well, already? We just talked about that on the podcast. And that's my only way of gauging time is by things that we've talked about on this podcast. So I just assumed that this whole Tim Lambesis story was like in the news, I don't know, like 3 or 4 months ago or whatever. and that was that. Meanwhile, this guy's going to be like, I've been in jail for 2 years.
Yeah, it feels like we talked about it like 6 months ago, doesn't it?
I guess, but shit. I don't know. I don't have any particular opinion on the legality of this.
I do.
I mean, listeners shouldn't try to assassinate anyone. If you want my life advice.
Listen, I got an opinion on this. Is the judicial system in America is pretty messed up. You can get 30 years for selling weed. Listen, I don't think you should smoke weed. I don't think you should sell weed. I think that's bad. But you can get 30 years for that. And this guy literally attempted murder 2.5 years, and he's out like a peach. So, listen, don't support this guy. What can I say? Speaking of people that you probably should support, Kayetana. They've got a new album coming out. It's called A New Kind of Normal. Kayetana from Philadelphia, up-and-coming band, kind of got a 90s alt-rock vibe to them to a degree, I think you could say. Maybe a Four Non-Blondes kind of thing gone, maybe
Lannis, sort of,
to a degree. I actually felt bad for this band because not the last review we did, but the review before that, they got a pretty bad review, and you could tell it really bummed them out. And at Punk News, we don't control what a review should be so long as the review backs up your opinion. And so that's what the writer did. So he ran it. And I know they were kind of bummed out. I thought their release was better than the writer's opinion, but that was the writer's opinion. So the point being is I think this is a pretty cool group, pretty interesting group, not like my favorite group, but I think they're interesting. I think of all of the bands doing the kind of thing that they're doing, they do have an inherent skill for melody and interesting lyrical angle, which I think makes them more interesting than perhaps other musicians of their that do the kind of thing that they do.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I haven't really listened to them a lot, but when I do, it's typically when they're out here, they typically headline for bigger acts. I think I saw them with the Menzingers a few years ago, and then they also opened for Against Me at one time out here too. So that's when that's usually when I see them, and they've been really kind of I can appreciate that they're different. I've never been super into their stuff, but there. I don't have any real, I don't have any hate for them or anything like that. Did we, what labels is coming out on? Did they say?
I will say, Ricky, that, like, you know, both you and I have said, well, listen, it's cool. It's not really our thing. And I don't mean this derisively. I mean this as a compliment. This music isn't really written for us. And I don't mean that, oh, it's not written for, I mean, it's, we're not the intended audience, which it goes to show how good it is in that it does connect with us to a degree that's not written for us. But it's also good that they're writing to an audience that maybe is underrepresented this general field, you know.
Listen, when I see them, when I have seen them, I've seen other people go crazy, like, yeah, in a good way, when they play. Like, they are loved by a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know what's coming out on, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah. Listen, we got two quick last ones. One of Ricky's favorite bands, Direct Hit. Fat Records is reissuing Dome Splitter. Ricky, how many versions are you going to buy of this record? 7, 8, 9?
Well, actually, you know, there's a story behind that. This record came out. This is one of the first records I think I ever pre-ordered when I first started collecting records. What happened was, Kind of Like Records, which was the original label that they were signed to when this came out. There was a pressing plant error, and what happened was it was supposed to be a red with white splatter on it record, but it turned out that the record label, I mean, the pressing plant came out with a white with red splatter. So what happened was it became like half red and then half white, and then there was black. There are people out there, diehard collectors, that have all three colors. I have the white on red that's signed by the band. There was a lot of pressure for Fat for the band to re-release it. And I guess, and it's totally fitting for it to be on Fat because it's totally within the Fat realm. Absolutely. I think if you're new to this, if you are newer to this band, like you got into them at Brainless God, I'll be interested to hear what you think, because it's, at the time for me, it was one of my favorite records. But compared to what they've accomplished now, it might seem a little primitive, but it's still really good. I'm not calling it, I don't want to call it primitive, but when you compare it, you could just see how big of the strides they've made just in the last two records, and then the collection that they did on Red Scare. So yeah, give this a listen. This was one of my first reviews for Punk News, actually, the original pressing. And I think I gave it like an 8 or a 9. Sorry, if you don't like 8 or 9 reviews, this is a really cool pop punk record. It's angry. I mean, if you've seen them live, they play Snickers or Reese's and Satan Says all the time. If you're a newer fan, check this out, because this is where they started, and it's really cool to listen to. I still throw this one on every once in a while. So I don't know if you guys have anything to say about it.
Well, speaking of pop punk, the originators of pop punk, and I think you could say this band invented pop punk, the Descendants, they've announced a bunch of tours, even though it's only the beginning of 2017 or close to the beginning. They've announced a bunch of basically 1 week dates scattered throughout the rest of the year, hitting the UK, hitting the USA. Adam White, they'll be vaguely close to you. They're kicking off their most recent tour in Santa Cruz at the Catalyst. And if you live in the Bay Area, you should go to this, because the Catalyst is a cool club. Santa Cruz is a great place. Two great record shops there. Streetlight Records, literally one block from the Catalyst, and the other one I forget the name of, but it's one block back from the Catalyst. Two really good record shops, especially Streetlight, awesome record store. So you basically should go to the Bay Area is what I'm saying. But listen, the Descendants, Adam White, are you going? But also, now that the Descendants playing live is no longer the rarity that it once was, will people fail to appreciate what the Descendants are doing, and is it just becoming another legacy act, or will Descendant shows always have that special zip? It's like, oh man, the Descendants are coming. I'm so excited because I didn't think I'd get to see them again.
I have an answer for this too after you, Adam.
I mean, it's maybe not as special as it was, you know, if you would have gotten to see them otherwise, but I'm happy that they are doing this, if for no other reason than, you know, you now have your chance. Like, you don't have a lot of excuses to not go see the Descendants. There's a lot of times a band that's going to reunite at fucking Coachella or something like that, you know, it's a lot to ask of their of their diehard fans to have to, you know, pony up for some festival that's halfway across the world and costs $1 million to go see them play for 25 minutes before, you know,
Soundgarden
comes on. So, you know, this is cool. Go see the Descendants. I have nothing bad to say about it. These shows are so far out into the future, though. Like the one that's close to me is the one in Toronto, and that's in September. Like, I can't make plans for September right now. I don't even know what I'm having for lunch tomorrow. So maybe I'll go, but that's a long time from now. Who knows where I'll be or what I'll be doing come September.
You might be in the Descendants by the time next September comes around.
There may not be a next September. We don't know, John.
That's true.
So what I would say is in the last like 2 years, I've seen the Descendants at festivals. And then in October, I saw them in a theater. I can unequivocally say that the show was much better in a theater. It seems like a lot of these are theater and smaller club shows, smaller than festivals, obviously. Go see them. I mean, if you haven't seen them, go. I mean, it's a great show. They kill it both in both sorts of venues, but there's something. It was definitely more intimate in a bigger theater than a giant festival like Punk Rock Bowling or It's Not Dead Fest. But yeah, that this it, I don't know. I, who knows when they'll I when it comes to this band, we don't know when they're going to come back or leave or whenever. So take advantage now. And I guess plan accordingly.
So listen, Adam White was talking about how great Devo was earlier. So let's just play some Devo. This is one of my favorite Devo tracks. It's one of the creepier ones. This is Devo doing Gates of Steel. that about wraps up the Punk News podcast. Any last words, Adam? White, Ricky, you guys going to any cool shows? I'm seeing No Bunny on Saturday. No Bunny's a burger band, you know, a Bay Area guy, kind of plays really sloppy pop punk slash garage rock. I'm really excited for that in a place called the York Garage, which I think might actually be a garage, to tell you the truth. Ricky, Adam, any last words? Any cool shows you guys are going to soon?
I got nothing. I don't think I have anything for this month. I did go to a Bomb Pops record release show in downtown, which was cool. But in March, I have Jeff Rosenstock and the Menzingers. And then I also have the Bouncing Souls and Get Dead, which I'm very excited to see Get Dead. I have not seen them yet.
Well, next Friday, I got an Ancient Shape show up here in the area. And I'm like,
are you going to get a cassette?
I don't know. I mean, I might just because it'll be cool and a rare thing.
It'll be like,
Yeah. I will probably get a cassette. I will probably never play the cassette, but I will probably get a cassette. But yeah, I mean, I'm sort of trying to I'm supposed to be out of town for a conference that weekend. It's related to this. So I'm going up to Toronto to go to PodCamp, which is a podcasting related, kind of like free unconference, like a self-organized conference. So I'm going to go up there and learn things and talk about podcasting with people. So it's quite relevant to this show, but anyways, I'm probably gonna not go on Friday so I could stay in town and see a band and then, take some sort of horrible early morning train up on Saturday because that's what rock and roll demands that I do. So that's what I'm going to do.
So let me tell you about my podcast, guys. We got one jackass on a smashed iPhone. We got one guy that's got too much gain on his microphone. We're doing real good.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.